getting older. Cannot sleep, got random pain.
In some ways you're wiser, bolder, but you're sweating.
It's like rain.
Search for answers, getting colder. They can't fix it, can't explain.
Your anxiety will smolder.
You've become a sex withholder.
There's bursitis in your shoulder.
'Cause you're circling the drain. Circling the drain. Circling the drain. Circling, circling the drain.
Down the drain.
Hello, and welcome to the Circling the Drain podcast. I'm Ellie Dvorkin-Dunn. I'm 45, and I know I'm in perimenopause because a unique combination of brain fog and nearsightedness caused me to almost rub estrogen cream all over my psoriasis. The tubes are the same shape, people. It's confusing.
I understand because I have also done something very similar. I am Julia Granacki. I'm 46, and I know I'm in perimenopause because I have no patience for the things that once gave me pleasure.
Nice.
Yeah. Ellie, maybe you should rub estrogen cream on your psoriasis and see what happens. I mean, you could stumble upon an accidental cure or something.
Maybe. I mean, I will say the estrogen cream that I was prescribed didn't help the thing that it was supposed to help. And my psoriasis cream also doesn't really do shit either. I just like every once in a while when I have a really bad flare, I'm like, maybe I should put this cream on it. Maybe it'll do something today. So you could be onto something, you know, like switching them up.
I mean, maybe the estrogen cream will make your skin horny and the psoriasis cream will make your vajay smooth and creamy. So that was like a little bit gross. Like I noticed as I said it, and it's probably super risky anyway.
Yeah. Listeners, don't try this at home. Mm-mm. Don't put psoriasis cream on your puss.
No.
It's not advisable. It's a weird hormonal. Anyway, you're basically a doctor, Julia. Yeah. That was like a doctor though, who would get sued and go to jail. 100%. Tell me about your lack of patience for pleasurable things. I think I know what you're talking about, but I want to hear it.
Yeah. You know, okay. So here's where I'm at right now. Manis and pedis. I don't fucking care. I don't have time. I'm going to riff a little bit here. So ever since I started taking like the collagen powder, okay, like with all my stuff, my nails, and this is, I don't want to complain about this. This is wonderful. I used to have brittle nails. Now I have nails that grow like weeds and I would have to go get a manicure like every other week. And so I just fucking like, I also type on a computer. So I just like cut them with nail clippers. Like I am trimming my teenage child's nails, or not a teenage, I don't know. I don't have kids, a toddler, whatever. You trim their nails, trimming my nails. Don't have time to go do a thing. I might paint them on my own and my feet and my toes, forget it. I don't even bother. Like I just, as soon as they become like talons, I will like trim them myself, but I don't have time to sit in a chair and have a nice lady like do all the things. I don't have the patience for it. I just don't have the patience. So like,
you don't have to go. No one says you have to go.
I know. But then, you know, I feel like an idiot because, you know, like this used to be something I enjoyed, you know, you get like the leg massage, you know, and I'm just like, I can't even like enjoy it. Cause I'm like, I have 100 other things I need to do. And I mean, talk about self-care all the time. And I'm like, I don't know if I can be bothered, but also like getting my hair colored. So listeners, if you've ever seen me, I have fairly long hair and I blonde it, right? It takes an hour to do a partial foil and an hour and a half to do a full foil. And then it takes 20 to 30 minutes to process my hair color. And then there's the shampooing and like the glaze. Okay. And then if I get a blow dry, which again, I would always get a blow dry when I was younger. Now I'm like, fuck it. I'll just leave this place with my hair soaking wet because I can't be bothered to get my hair blow dried because I have been sitting here for 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever. I can't do it.
Listen. Before we get angry letters, because this is a highly privileged, possibly tone deaf.
I was about to say,
there are people who cannot afford to get these processes, people who cannot find the time in their, you know, they have 8 children and they get, like nobody will relieve them so that they can go get these things done. It's all about what you actually want to do for your self-care. And, you know, you have a lot of really important projects going on right now. And if you feel like you can't do them when you're sitting in a 5-hour treatment, then the treatment no longer becomes enjoyable. It just becomes something that's preventing you from doing. And that's what you're trying to say, right?
That is what I'm trying to say.
I have to get my roots done and my nails attended to.
Yeah. I think I've said this many times that I am a bougie bitch. I am completely aware of my bougie privilege. And
we just have to point it out because, you know, we don't want people to be like, fuck this bitch.
Well, I mean, and maybe they should, because it is a stupid complaint, but it's, but yes, like you said, it's like between the day job, the podcast, the business I'm trying to start and grow, and like all the things that life throws at you in between, you know, yeah, I'm a little overwhelmed sometimes. And I don't want to sit in the chair to get my hair colored for like 3 hours. That's the
end. Doesn't feel relaxing, no. Is the point. I get
point
it.
In, yeah, point made.
I get it. That was a lovely rant, a bougie, lovely rant.
Thank you.
Now, I am in the mood for a rant, which means that it's time for...
That is not a thing!
I can't wait, and I'll tell you why. This is one of my favorite new segments, and I just love you, Ellie. That's all. So tell us, what is not a thing?
Okay. Many people assume that if they got their period early in life, that they'll go through menopause early. And listeners, that is not a thing. There's no like set number of periods to get through before you reach menopause. Now, there was a study done not too long ago that seemed to support this theory that there was a link between starting and stopping, but it has since been debunked. Now, although the average age of the first menstrual period has been getting younger in US women, there hasn't been a corresponding shift in the average age at menopause. Okay, so the average period age is now about 12.4 years old. It used to be like 13 point something. So kids are getting their periods younger. But the average age at menopause has been at around 51.5 for decades, and it is holding fast at that age. So if you're trying to predict what age you will go through menopause, find out the age your mother went through it, if that's possible in your life. Genetics is, in fact, the leading factor to making this prediction. But honestly, there's so much else that plays into this that my opinion is you shouldn't even bother trying to guess. Just go with it.
I agree. I mean, opinions are like assholes, Ellie. Everyone has one.
Everyone has one, mm-hmm. But they think each other's stink.
I know. Sage advice. We always come back to buttholes and shit.
Yeah, it's cliche. It's the whole thing, really.
Yeah. Well, before we go too far down the rabbit hole of cliches, let's talk about who we have on the pod today, Ellie.
Okay, you tell them because you're so excited and it's very cute.
Okay. On today's pod, we have Kelly Kane, founder of the Kane School Pilates Certification Training Program and a movement maverick who has an insatiable curiosity for exploring embodiment through movement. I happened to receive my Pilates certification at the Kane School, and I was so excited to learn that Kelly is now currently teaching workshops on women's sexuality and educating women on how to optimize their health through menopause. I mean, could this be more perfect for our show?
It couldn't. I mean, the only thing that would be more perfect is if I went away, rubbed estradiol cream on my psoriasis, and it disappeared.
That would be a miracle. You bought it right back around also,
yeah,
by the way.
I did. I like a good callback, so that's what I did there. It was in comedy, we call that a callback. I don't know if anyone laughed, but I called it back.
I laughed.
All right, let's get on with the show. Kelly Kane studied Pilates with Romana Krasanowska and Hila Paldi, completing her certification with the Pilates Institute. She has studied body-mind centering, continuum movement, Iyengar yoga, and has done extensive CrossFit training. She also attended massage school at the Florida School of Massage. Kelly's manual therapy repertoire includes structural integration, craniosacral therapy, and visceral manipulation. She further developed her perceptual skills through 3 years of human cadaver dissection. Mm-hmm. I can't even.
And in 1999, Kelly opened the Kane School of Core Integration in New York City, where I happened to get my certification. The teacher training programs at the Kane School are singular in their emphasis on developing teachers' anatomical knowledge and palpation skills while exacting an understanding of the classic Pilates repertory. Kelly recently launched a new virtual course, Sex Ed, that supports women to connect to their personal sexuality through a baseline of education of vulvo-vaginal anatomy, female sexual response, and polyvagal theory, and gives women a clear understanding of how to optimize their pleasure. Concurrently, she launched the Wild Women's Council, a course to educate women on how to optimize their health through menopause. Kelly lives in Woodstock, Vermont, and has a studio where she sees clients. She also teaches the Pilates certification in New York City at the Kane School. Kelly, Welcome to the pod. We are so excited to hear about all of your new ventures.
Oh, the pod. I love it. The pod.
Kelly, please begin by telling us your age and where you are in your peri, meno, or postmenopausal journey.
So I am 56 and I'm more than 1 year past my last menstrual cycle. So I'm fully postmenopausal.
All You've right. arrived. Congratulations.
Yeah, I've arrived. Yeah, I'm
Pretty
liking it.
Cut. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we hear that. And it's obviously gives us something to look forward to. If we heard everybody postmenopausal saying, my life sucks and will suck forever, what would we do? So wait, before we dive into the deeper questions that I know Julia is itching to ask you, can you give us like a brief overview of what going through menopause was like for you? Any particular symptoms that stood out for you, supplements or therapies that you found helpful? Anything you want to tell us about it?
It wasn't that big of a deal for me. It was one of those people who had just, I had some hot flashes, but I literally felt like I had been cold my whole life. And so having some hot flashes, I was happy. I'm not cold anymore. That's been the most radical shift. Like I used to be always wearing like tons of sweaters and just cold. I'm sure you guys know women, my older daughter's like that. So I did not have a lot of the more testy and uncomfortable symptoms. Mm. I did go through like the menopause anger a little bit. Like, and I mean, we can talk about that, but I think that most women who go through menopause, that beast rears. And I think that one of the things I try to work with women is how to use that kind of anger and fight for actualizing their soul's purpose.
Yeah, I like that. Use that fire.
Yeah, as opposed to being like confused about it or, you know, pistol whipping their husband or, you know, like really direct that into like how they're going to live out the rest of their lives and what is their legacy going to be and utilize that energy for that. So that started to come up for me, I'd probably say around 50. But I also had my second child when I was 44.
Yeah. Okay.
I had my first child when I was 31 and my second child when I was 44. And I was not planning that second child. Like, you know, but there was also like a lot happening in my now ex-husband's in my life. Like his mother and stepfather had died. There was like a lot of, you know, how there's like that can be there that familial transition where people go. And all of a sudden I was pregnant at 44. And I always say sperm wasn't flying everywhere. So I'm not really sure what went down. Like there was some kind of divine intervention. And so now I'm 56 with a 12-year-old child.
All right.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, we've said on the show before too, that it can be like, if you're in perimenopause, which if you were at 44, you can be more likely to get pregnant because it can be more or less predictable.
Yeah. I mean, I'm Irish on one side of my family and we have a lot of late pregnancies in that side of my family. I'm not the only one. So it didn't seem particularly unusual that I got pregnant at that time, interestingly.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was. It was good.
When you were feeling that anger, you know, you talked about channeling it, but were there any other things you did to mitigate it? I mean, did you take things or did you just find, no, you didn't.
No, I mean, I'm like, my primary like kind of healthcare modality, I think, is getting acupuncture. So I resource my acupuncturist just to, I guess, you know, just as prophylactically almost, because I actually didn't find menopause very challenging. I just didn't. It, like I was one of those people, it was kind of a blip on my radar screen. And I think that one of the things that happens with that anger is that, you know, I always go back to this idea. It's like, it's a Margaret Mead quote, but Esther Perel has co-opted it, that is basically goes that most Western women, most Western adults will have three primary relationships in their lives. And those relationships will be with either one person or three different people. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. Did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And I think that what I kind of, you know, adopt it to say that we all, as women and as human beings, but particularly as women, will have three primary phases in our adult life. And so, like, I feel like moving from fertility to post-fertility is an inflection point, right? Where it's like the things that you haven't tended to in your psyche, in your relationship to yourself, in your relationship to your family or your community, they need to be tended to. And I feel like that fire and that anger is a part of, you know, unearthing that and exposing it and handling it. And I think that it gets a bad rap because angry bitches get a bad rap, you know? And I think that, like, really strategizing how to wield that force is one of the things that drove me to start working with women's sexuality again. I used to many years ago, and to work with women in menopause. Because I feel like women, especially older women, are an untapped national treasure. And I also feel like I often see men gain power as they age.
Yeah.
And women tend not to gain power on the global stage. And I'm just over it. I'm over that. Like, that's not the deal. It's just not the deal. So, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And I think, you know, you're talking about anger, but it's like we have so much to be angry about. How can you tell me not to be angry? And I'm all for channeling it because I have noticed, as Ellie and I have done the show, you know, our kind of like symptoms have evolved and changed over the months that we've been doing this. And we've been trying different treatments and all sorts of things. And for me, a lot of things have resolved, but my anger trigger is like really sensitive.
Yeah. So can I ask what it is, what your anger trigger is?
I mean, it's mostly work related. And I think part of it has to do with the demands at my job. And I'm really trying to get out of there. So it's, I think, just people wanting stuff from me all the time. Like, I'm just tired of people wanting stuff from me all the time. Even though that's like, I get paid for that. That's what I do. But,
you know, that's, I'm just going to interrupt.
Yeah,
that is really indicative of the hormonal changes that happen through menopause, because, you know, the kind of progesterone, estrogen, FSH, LH that keep us tied to partnership and children and allows us to put those people before our own needs, their needs before our own needs, that starts to shift as you go through menopause, right?
Yep.
So, like you basically just said, what happens is like people always wanting something from you and you're just like, I've had it. Like, I don't want to, like, I don't have it. Whatever it is, I don't have it. So
I have nothing more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's anger inducing.
It's interesting. I didn't have this, but a lot of friends have use the phrase, friends who have freshly had babies or toddlers, have toddlers, use the phrase touched out. Like, you feel like, let's say you're nursing and people are on you all day and they're sleeping on you and mommy, mommy, mommy. And then your husband or your partner comes home and they're touching you and they went. And so there's this phrase that, Julia, you as a non-parent may not have heard so much, being touched out. And I feel like what you're describing is the equivalent of,
well, they're
that.
Touching my brain.
That's right. Yeah. Your brain is touched out and you want to think about what you want to think about. And you're starting to move into other areas that are of more interest to you. So you're already, you know, one foot out the door and these other people are mentally touching out your brain and you're like, get your freaking thoughts out my brain.
Yeah. And I think that that's like,
your grubby fingers, get them off my brain.
But I think that that's real.
It is
and
real.
That, you know, and then it's like, I feel like it is our, it's the opportunity to make some real decisions as to what you want your elder stateswomanhood to look like, you know? And I really am in, I love that idea of walking the elder's path. Like, what does it look like to be an elder? I want to be an elder. Like, I'm not someone who wants to, you know, I'm not going to change how I look. It's not that I support people changing how they look. I'm not like, I want to walk the elder path. It's one of the things I'm really interested in and choosing that, you know?
I think about this idea of the maiden, mother, and crone. And I'm like really excited to walk the crone's path. I'm so much wiser than I was when I was a maiden. I was never a mother, but all of these stages, like the wisdom I have now is so much greater than before. And I look forward to getting wiser and like giving less shits. Like that's the best part too, is like the no shits.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the next question for her, I do have to say, when I find myself mindlessly scrolling through social media, it's not the pictures of Kim Kardashian that I want to look like. It's when 100-year-old Iris Apfel comes up in my feed and she looks frigging amazing and she's a style maven, and or like Prue from the British Baking Show with the big colorful I'm like, I want to go full Prue. I want to go full Iris. Like, when can I do that? I don't, it's not, yes, crone. Yes, the elder's path. Yes, all of
it. I like it.
All right.
Well, I want to know more about your new sex ed course and what led you to expand your focus from Pilates to women's sexuality. And what can you tell us about this new course?
So
I want to know everything.
So I used to teach a workshop called Inside Out with a woman named Virginia Reith. Do you guys know her from the New York City area? She's a badass. And she is funny as hell. And she's been a women's health advocate in the New York City area for a very long time. She used to have a radio program on WBAI called Snatches.
Perfect. That's right in our wheelhouse.
Yes. And she and I have been friends for a long time. She was a client. And then when I was working with her, she's a physician's assistant, but she was one of the, I think she's one of the OBGYNs or acting OBGYNs who founded Downtown Women's Health. I think it's Downtown's Women Health, but it's an OBGYN practice.
Yeah.
And she and I used to teach a course together called Inside Out. And she would teach vulvovaginal health and female sexual response cycle and, you know, the basics of how to care for your vulvovaginal system, like really just bacteria and candida and dryness and lubrication, like all the things with the just basic things. And then I did pelvic floor and vaginal strength, basically, and how to keep and maintain strength so that sexual response was intact. And I gave women tools to understand how to get what I call a C-spot orgasm. I don't call it a G-spot orgasm because there are, I think, 8 or 9 structures in the vulvovaginal system that are named after male gynecologists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was just an article about that. The New York Times.
That's right.
Oh, really?
That's
right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote about it on my Insta. But anyways, and then, you know, I think there's one in the penis named after a male doctor. So I call this the G-spot, the C-spot. And one of the things that we used to talk about quite a bit, or I talked about, was that, you know, in order to have, you know, a healthy erectile response, because women's vulvovaginal system is similar to men's, and that blood flow is what creates lubrication and titillation and neurological response and good feelings, right? And like keeping your pelvic floor will help to keep that system online and healthy and happy, but also strengthening your vaginal canal, it can increase your sexual response, right? And intensity. And that wasn't being talked about. So we talked about that quite a bit. So, you know, if you think about the bottom of your pelvis, right? So between your tailbone and your sits bones, there's a floor, right? So when you poop, it pinches the loaf. I know you guys like to talk about
poop. We do.
I know. I gave colonics. I started giving colonics when I was 18. So I'm like, I'll get right into the poop talk with
you. Versed in the poop.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, it's the musculature that closes the vaginal opening. It will, you know, bring the sits bones together. It actually closes like the lips of the vagina too, or of the vulva. So that was something that, you know, we taught. And then I started teaching people how to strengthen the vaginal canal. And the vaginal canal, I always say, is where the tampon sits, where the penis goes in, the baby comes out, or the dildo goes in, or the finger goes in. So it's that pathway between the opening of the vulva and the introitus and the cervix. It's that canal. So that's what we taught for a long time. And then I was busy with building a business in New York City, and Virginia was doing her private practice, and we stopped teaching that course. And then when I got divorced, I found my jade egg and I was like, huh, look at this thing. I forgot I had this. I started, like, you know, it was pandemic times. I will often say that I am a little feral too. I live in central Vermont in the middle of nowhere. And so I spend a lot of time outside, and I'm not traditionally, I would not say that I'm a crystals girl. I think I'm becoming a rocks and crystals girl now that I'm putting them in my vagina more, but I started, I
it's mean, a good it's place like, for them, right? That's where right? they it's, go.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So I started working with it, and I started doing Mantak Kiya's microcosmic orbit, which is a Taoist sexual practice, which is a meditation practice. And I just, it was this interesting thing where it somehow contextualized my sexual self in relationship to myself. You know, it was like this way to, it was this thing that I could kind of frame a practice around. And so I started working with it. And then the process of working with it, it was like I was healing. Like,
love this.
Yeah. Like my body was reminding my brain what it had been through. Right. So in working and doing my meditation, I remembered, which I never think about, but I remembered about a colposcopy I had because I had HPV, and Virginia treated me for that, but I ended up having a colposcopy, and I went through kind of like healing some unresolved stuff around, like, when my younger daughter was born, an abortion I had, and like unexpectedly took me through this process. And then I was like, okay, I want to start doing deep dives into this. And then I started talking to even my friends in the know, and most women don't know their vulvovaginal anatomy. They don't know that there's different ways to orgasm. They don't actually know what truly pleases them, like really pleases them. And I think that in my own excavation of my sexual self, like, I was married for 20 years. I had just got out of a marriage. My sexual identity was changing. My identity as a woman in the world was changing. And I started to feel like I'm in this world and I don't even, like, I haven't had this deep relationship to myself. Me Too was happening. And I was hearing about women who, in situations with powerful men masturbating in front of them, they couldn't be like, don't do that. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. Right. That was not available. Right.
Yeah. And trying to explain that to a man is really difficult.
Yeah.
They don't understand, well, why didn't she leave? Why didn't she, yeah. you know, and they don't understand the power dynamic.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think what I started to feel is that many women, including myself, learn our sexuality in partnership. That's where we learn it, right? And there is a vested interest in that being the reality of the powers that be. And I felt like if I could help women orient themselves towards their personal sexuality and pleasure, then there would be power in that for them to be able to say no, to be able to say yes, to be able to actualize, you know, their sexual selves, the abundance in their lives. Like, it just felt like there could be a lot of collateral benefits. So that's why I started going back to teaching it. And I have a pelvic floor and pelvic pain PT up here in Vermont who comes in and talks, and she walks people. It's a virtual workshop. So we walk people through palpating the structures and doing pelvic floor releases on ourselves. I have Gil Headley. Do you know Gil Headley? Do you know who he is?
Yeah, from school, right?
Well, he's an anatomist, and he's got this, I don't know what it is. I think his website is gilheadley.com.
Okay.
And he gave me his, he does, you know, I did dissection with him, and I've done clitoral dissection with him, and he gave me this lecture he did on the clitoris. And so there's like, it's my work, and it's my, like, I'm leading and framing it, but it's really about kind of bringing people who've inspired me together and helping women really truly orient their sexuality in themselves and unearth what pleasure is for them in this moment, not when you were 16, not when, you know, you were with your partner. It was like, in this moment, what is your personal sexuality? And it felt like in all the work I had done, that's the only way to do it. That's the only way to find that point, right? It's not through talking. It's not through partnership. It's not through, you know, all these machinations that we make. It's really about taking the time to be intimate with ourselves. And so that's what I wanted to create.
That's fantastic.
I mean, I'm ready to sign up.
Yes.
If listeners, if you just heard all of that and you're not ready to like click the button, then I don't know if you're listening hard enough, because that this is just, I think, especially because many women, and I'm just going to speak for myself right now, I am in a funky place. I'm in a weird, I have a weird relationship with my body right now. I have a weird relationship with my sexuality. And we talk about all of this, you know, on the show often. And it's like wearing a suit that doesn't belong to me. And I keep putting it off. I'm like, Kelly, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna get to it. Like, I'll think about it tomorrow. I'm going to give it my attention later. And it's like, how much longer am I going to let this go on? Because I'm not happy about it. Mm-hmm. And I would like to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of women, and again, speaking for myself too, it's a little scary,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
definitely.
It is. Yeah, it is scary. And you know, so I've taught it now, this particular workshop, 3 times. And it's really about kind of laying it bare, literally, like not like I really try to create this environment where we're coming at it with curious new eyes. Because, you know, women, they have cycles, like we have daily cycles, monthly cycles, yearly cycles. There's so many cycles, you know, and I think it's part of the reason that research on women's physiology is complicated is because it changes all the time. Like it just does. And we could talk about all those different changes, but I really have tried to like really pare it down and go slow and purposeful and, you know, like feel like, does the right side of your inner labia feel more sensitive than the left? Does your belly or your inner thighs feel more sensitive than any of that? Like if you're having clitoral orgasm and you want to have a C-spot orgasm or a cervical orgasm, like how does that happen and what do you need to do to? And it's not even like, I really try to keep it away from goal orientation, but really about like surfing the beauty and singular alchemy of our female form, you know, because it's amazing. It's the best.
I feel like Julia and I need to take the class together. I am not a naked person. I love sex and I've always loved sex, but I'm not a naked person. I don't like,
I understand.
Walk around my house naked. Right.
We call that a never nude.
I'm a never nude.
Never nude. Never nude.
Like I change like as if someone, even when I'm by myself sometimes, like as if someone might be watching. But I set that up to say, I think Julia is the friend that I've been naked with the most because we have found ourselves in a lot of spa situations that, well,
oh my
we
God,
found ourselves
right.
in a spa situation where we were naked together, but then we put ourselves in the same spa and a different several times where we've just been naked. So I feel like I have no idea the details of this class, how naked or not naked anyone has to get, but I feel like it doesn't matter. This is the kind of thing Julia and I should, we're both, this is a part of our friendship.
This is what we do, Ellie.
Oh my God. Someday.
So, wait, let me explain how it goes. So it's virtual.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So people can turn off. I mean, that's why I decided to do it in the way that I'm doing it, because it's the best thing to do virtually, right?
Yes. Yeah. So safe.
Yeah. And people can turn off their cameras and keep their mics on to ask questions while we're taking them through like pelvic floor releases. And honestly, you know, people could be self-pleasuring, but that's not really how it rolls. You know, it's more about like relearning the map of our physiology, both sensorily and topographically. Mm. And so that's the whole thing. But also people who've taken the course, I'm going to start offering something called the Sugar Bush practice.
I saw that on your website. Do you know like the street I grew up on was Sugar Bush?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, a sugar bush is a maple grove. And so I live in Vermont, and like, you know, a sugar bush is like, those people will say, well, I have a sugar bush on my property, which just means that there's a bunch of maple trees. And so they'll be making maple syrup. But I always liked that verbiage. I was going to call it church.
Church.
I was going to call it temple. That was, you know, the second one. But then I think Sugar Bush is going to be it. So then we'll meet. I think I'm going to start doing that next month. And we're going to be meeting once a month. And I'll give practice, like tantric practice and breathing practice and practice towards changing or optimizing neurology for more C-spot orgasm or cervical orgasm, or just practices to amplify any of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really, you know, I think like talking about eldership, right? The amount of sexual assault that women's bodies have endured is stunning. Like the statistics are between 1 in 5 or 2 in 4. Like I've read both. I like to also say that, you know, 2 in 4 men are rapists. Like it's hard for me to always be putting it on women.
Right. It's a good point.
And so I really, like, even as I'm sitting here, I'm just like, my heart is like so heavy with that reality, you know? And that's really one of the things I wanted to work on for the women that I love and I'm surrounded by. And then also for my babies. Like I have two girls. And I actually think eventually I'm going to start working with men. It's already starting to happen.
Yeah.
It's not what I really want.
But someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. It's going to be my real like trial by fire for sure. Ooh. I think it's going to happen. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a statement on your website that reads, Kelly Kane is a movement maverick who has an insatiable curiosity for exploring embodiment through movement. So unpack that for us a little bit. Maybe tell our listeners about the different types of movement you're passionate about and how each one can affect health and well-being, especially as we age. I mean, obviously we've just talked about, you know, all of the lady parts.
Well, so, you know, I've been teaching Pilates for, God, I think like 27 years. And I started teaching HIIT twice a week in the
pandemic.
Can I
just tell you one thing? I'm sorry, I have to interject. Just so a few years back, I was in for a workshop with you. And I'm sorry to say that I can't remember which one it was for, but you had just started doing HIIT.
Yeah.
And you were like, this shit is amazing. I am sold. You were like, you guys have to try it. And I was like, okay. So it's wild. Like years later, you're like, this is what I do now. Like,
well, the research is really clear for menopausal women too. That's the thing, is that it's one of the exercise modalities that has been shown over and over through like, you know, research to be able to really address many of the issues surrounding menopause, bone density, cardiac respiratory health, the, you know, diminishing the risk of sarcopenia, which is muscle wasting, you know, because of the nature of going hard for short periods of time, there is definite benefit to brain health because the movement is never the same. There's neurological benefit for coordination and balance. So there's just all these, you know, I just was like, this is what I just have to teach. If I'm going to help people, especially in the pandemic, and they're in their apartments in New York, like I'm in Vermont, I mountain bike, I ski, I snowboard, I do all kinds of stuff up here. But my community in part is in New York, in large part. And I was imagining all the people, you know, in their apartments with one little space for a mat, right? Yeah. And I was like, this will be a great modality. I teach it with a woman I trained a while ago who in her own right is just a maverick. Her name's Whitney Tucker. And I've known her a long time. And in the beginning of the pandemic, we started connecting and I was like, let's do this together. We had very similar, I mean, she was a dancer. I'm not a dancer, but we had kind of similar trajectories in some way. And then we teach Wim Hof method.
What is that?
It's a breathing technique.
Okay.
And so we do Wim Hof, which, you know, is really about kind of priming your cellular respiration and your capacity to maximize your time during HIIT is what I would say.
Okay.
And so we do that and I do HIIT and I like, listen, I move slow. I'm a big, slow mover. I'm just like, I don't like moving fast. I like to go fast, but I don't necessarily like to move fast. So I like to go fast on my mountain bike and fast on my snowboard. But those, I mean, mountain bike, you have to work, but HIIT, it's like one of those things you got to go fast. And so I do that. And then I mountain bike and I do stand up paddle boarding a lot in the summer.
You're very lazy, Kelly.
Yeah.
Very lazy.
Well, I like, I mean, this is one of the things is like, one of the things I think about as we age, and I've heard this before, is like, I think about moving 1 hour a week for every decade I've lived. So I,
ooh, I like that.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I work with women up here in Vermont who are in their 80s and 90s, and they are moving 8 to 10 hours a week. And that's how I think about it. And it doesn't, like, for me, it's not always like HIIT or Pilates or, you know, I do some weight training. It's like, I like to be like this morning, I woke up, I get up early and I rode my bike at sunrise. And I woke up like I'm not someone who gets easily depressed or sad. And I've been a little sad, like my daughter is going back and forth and I miss her when she goes. And, you know, I live in the woods, so it's a little isolated. And I was like, I need to up my gaze and my heart. And so I went and rode my bike. And I think that as I've gotten older, I've really kind of used one of my idols, Jane Fonda, as a role model for like choosing the kinds of exercises that like make my heart happy, not only, you know, heart health, but make me feel happier. And I like to look around and see the trees and the bugs. I just went for a little walk and saw like new mushrooms. I know it's like, that's the part of me that's really feral, as I've gotten feral that way. Yeah. So that's what I'm doing these days.
I love it. But I mean, you know, there's data. It's not even like this, it's unique to you and it's working, but there's data out there saying that when we connect to nature, we feel better and that you're supposed to get, I think like, if you can get out every weekend for an hour, I think they've said, you know, into nature that that's, you know, so beneficial. And then, you know, if you're biking at sunrise, it's like that exposure to the sunlight, you know, getting your cortisol moving like early in the morning, getting you up and pumped. Like, you know, there's like the existential stuff, right? But then there's also the practical, like sciencey stuff. And I love all of that. A little bit of both.
There's a ton of the sciencey stuff. And, you know, honestly, one of the things, so moving from New York City to Central Vermont, like I moved to a really isolated place 7 years ago. And I used to have friends come up from New York and they'd be like, what are we doing? I'd be like, what do you mean? What do we do? Is there a cafe?
You're looking at it.
Yeah. It's like, no cafes, man. We are we're going to go outside. Like, that's what we're doing here. And I really, I guess for me, one of the things I've been very committed to is really understanding my place in the natural world and really working towards being a steward of the planet. And so one of the things I do is I stand up paddleboard in rivers, and I started my little tiny not-for-profit because I pull tires out of rivers.
Oh.
A lot of people dump tires in rivers.
Why? Because,
well, you know, there's a lot of wealth in Vermont. There's a lot of poverty in Vermont.
Yeah.
And so I've done since I moved here, I've pulled out like, I think 157,
Jesus.
Maybe more. Oh my God.
Maybe more than that. So pulling tires out of the river, and it's $5 a tire to take it to the dump. And I think that, you know, so I started a little not-for-profit and I had one donor. And so I have one donor who takes care of the finances. I think one of the things that's part of this being a woman in the world is being in nature and being active towards protecting her. And that's one thing I can do. I see it. I'm on rivers that no one is ever on. I see tires in the river. I fish them out. You know, I think that's how we all have to act, but I can only control what I do. And so, yeah, that's what I've been doing, pulling tires out of the river.
It's not a thing I thought we were going to talk about.
I
know. No, but I'm so glad we did.
Me too.
It reminds me, I read somewhere, you know, that climate change is a woman's problem. You know, I have read this over and over again, and mainly just because we populate the planet. You know, we take care of the children. That's just the culture that we're in, right? And well, we have to make sure that the future is solid for the kids. And I don't even have kids, and I get it. That always kills me, by the way, when I talk to people and I'm like, I'm concerned and I don't have kids. Like, I just have to live and, like, you know, die, and that's fine, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm worried about other people's children, you know?
Yeah. And we should be. I mean, and it's stunning to me that that's not what we're all talking about, because all of this is irrelevant if we don't have a habitable planet.
You think?
Yeah, it's all irrelevant. And to me, it just feels like it's stunning that that's not on the tips of all.
It's the most important thing.
Number one.
We can look at all kinds of important issues out there, and there are so many that deserve our attention. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have a planet to live on, then none of those other things matter. It just seems really basic and obvious, and it's shocking how not everyone is on board.
I believe that women's ways of knowing and being and women's design will have to come to the forefront for that shift to happen. I believe that.
I agree.
Yeah. I think that, you know, domination of the planet, like what? Like, that can't be the thing anymore. Like, raping and pillaging the earth can't be the thing anymore, you know? And I don't have the solution. I just have my little solution of pulling tires out of the river. That's what I got. That's what I can do, right?
If everybody started pulling tires out of rivers or the equivalent of, we'd be in better shape though.
Yeah. I actually moved. So I moved from a pretty big life with three houses and, you know, lots of stuff to my house here is 900 square feet and energy efficient.
Yeah.
That was really important to me. That's what I want. I don't want to use more than what I need. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I think like the McMansions of the 80s and 90s, like it's not cool anymore. You want to be cool, get like a tiny little house, you know, buy local. It's just, that's the cool way to go. I
want a container house. It's my dream.
I know.
It is.
To build a container house. Yeah.
Do you watch like the Netflix programs about the tiny container houses?
No.
I don't, but I've seen them up here. There's lots of them here.
I bet.
Yeah, you got to come
like,
up and see.
It's my dream. It is my dream.
Yeah.
You've said that you are very interested in older women's agency. We've been talking a lot about that and their force as a national treasure and how to actualize their power in the world. You know, we've talked about this. We know that a lot of this is coming through your process, but I'd love to hear about some older women that, in your opinion, embody those ideals.
Yeah. So I always think about like in a lot of ways, I'm really self-taught, and I'm taught by my clients, because I've been teaching female bodies for 27 years. One of the reasons I started doing this menopause work was my own personal process, but my community of older women that I work with up here in Vermont, and I have a group of women in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. They all are outdoors women of one kind of or another, like horse women or alpine enthusiasts or, you know, gardeners. I would say gardeners and hikers, like that's definitely a group. And one of the things that happened when I moved up here is like I started working just at a local Pilates studio. And the woman who owned the studio, Deanna Bush, she was really a great Pilates teacher. But I was seeing that the population needed more hypertrophy and muscle density because, like, every year I've lived here, I've fallen on the ice every single year, like legs flying out from underneath me. And as we know, like, if you break a hip, that's like, you know, a determinant of mortality.
The rest of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I started to feel like I really wanted to work in a more personal training, like really doing more like weightlifting and functional body movement. And so I started doing that. And I've watched the population like really, really change. And I think the combination of kind of the detailed biomechanics and arthrokinematics that Pilates provides, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we would all, if all three of us did a squat, we would all basically look the same, right? Like if someone gave us basic instruction, but the details of what our feet are doing and the details of where the weight is going through the foot. And if I'm engaging my abs before I go into the squat or I'm fully extending through my hip extensors when I stand, or if I'm thrusting my pelvis forward, like those little things are really going to suboptimize or optimize that movement.
Right. All the biomechanics.
The biomechanics and then arthrokinematics. So the biomechanics are the more global movements, but then the detail of what's happening at the joint. Right? Like right. What's happening between the humeral head and the glenoid fossa, there's scapulothoracic juncture, or like what happens. I've been obsessed with the upper ribs, like up this whole area, because we're all like this.
Kelly, we just talked about this on an episode. I think of you every time this stuff happens, but I had what I thought was a boob problem and it turned out to be a fascia problem.
Yeah.
It was my pectoral. Episode. Okay. Yeah. The pectoral fascia. Yeah. But yeah, my ribs are just jacked up from sitting at a computer.
Yeah. So I think that what I found is that like coupling the knowledge that working in the way that I do around Pilates with body weight training, HIIT, and breathing practices has really catapulted my older clientele into feeling just capable of doing all the things they want to do. It's not that they weren't there, but I think it created so much more security, less pain, higher function. And really the reality is the stronger you are, the less pain you have. It's just the deal, right? Yeah. It just is, you know? Yeah. And so that's kind of what drove me in like this whole, like what's happening in my professional life. They taught me. Also, when the pandemic started, it was amazing. Like all my older women were just like, we got you. We'll pay you, figure out how to get us online. Like they just were there. They were like, it is so important to us to continue to work with you. Let's like, what are we going to do to make that happen? And it was a scary time. I mean, it was a scary time for everyone. And I was kind of starting the divorce process when the pandemic hit. And so not only did I really felt not only was I important to, like they were important to me, I was really important to them, you know? And so I felt like that feminine force carried me through in some way. So yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it was wonderful. I just have to say one thing too, is that in the beginning of the pandemic, you were one of the first studios to really you know, the Connected Studio here in New York to get to offer online. You guys pivoted really quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, like every day I had to do something. And so yeah. I just was logging in, doing those early morning mat classes and stuff. And it really just helped my mental health and my emotional health.
Yeah.
You know, let alone the physical. So they were there for you. Well, you guys were there for me. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah. That was, you know, Matt, who owns the studio, he is a hustler. He just like got it. And, you know, we all kind of were like, okay, what are we doing? And we really did pivot. And it is that thing of like, I watched people take true responsibility for their health during the pandemic in ways they had never done before. Like, you know, as a Pilates professional, right? I'm working with a lot of people who can afford it, which is like, and then they can also abdicate. Like they can abdicate the responsibility to me in a way, right? Mm-hmm. I tell them what to do. I tell them to lift their leg. I tell them they got to do more, blah, blah, blah. But really, I saw many of my clients, not all, but many of them really take a different kind of responsibility with their health and well-being during the pandemic. And that's been one of the cool things about the pandemic.
So we've covered vaginas and jade eggs and fishing tires out of rivers and women empowering each other. So I really think it's time to move on to the final four because, I mean, what else is there really?
Yeah.
Also, I could talk all night and I need to shut up and go to bed.
I know. We all got to get to bed. We didn't talk poop, but we'll leave that for the next conversation.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk poop with you anytime, Kelly.
Maybe poop will come up in the over the course of this final four. Let's see if we can find a way to... You did say pinching a loaf, which is not a phrase I've heard in a long time.
In a long time. Like,
so I was really happy for that to be revived for me, and I'm going to use it at least once a day for the next 2 weeks. And my goal is to get my 7-year-old son to start using it so that his friends start using it. This is how we affect change, Kelly, really. It's not about fishing tires out of rivers. It's about getting children to use antiquated phrases like pinching a loaf.
Or defecation. One or the other.
Right. Question one. What do you wish you understood at 30 that you know now?
I think about like time poverty a lot. And I think that I would really choose wisely how you spend your time, how you give your time, how you focus your attention with your time. I think that that's not that I feel like I've wasted time, but I think that time is really valuable. And I think that as women, we get into this cycle of giving our time to other people when we should be giving some more time to ourselves.
100%.
And I also feel like women can do a lot with a little time. And so I guess I feel like that's a big one for me is just choose wisely how you spend your time.
That's a good one.
Question number two, what do you have an abundance of?
What do I have an abundance of?
Tires.
I do. I have a lot of time alone right now, which has been interesting. It's the first time in my life I've ever been lonely, which has been interesting. I really can honestly say it's the first time I've been lonely. And most of the time I've spent alone has been what I would think of as solitude, you know, like really taking time to process my divorce and my changing identity. But I think that I've felt lonely. And I also have been able to really have no distractions to process what's happened this year. Mm. And I actually, even though it's been really hard, I feel like it's been a blessing. I've really developed some strong self-care practices. And like, you can't fudge it right now. I couldn't fudge it. You know, I couldn't be like, I'm going to the bar. I'm going to go have a date. Like, I'm going to like do some other distracting behavior. I'm not a big drinker. I'm not going to drink. You know, I'm like, I had to really drop into the pain and the gifts and walk through it, like really walk through it. And I don't know if I've ever had to do that in the way I've had to do this year. Mm. So loneliness and solitude, both, which has been cool.
Mm. Yeah. That's the first. I enjoyed that.
I did Thank too. You. What part of your body are you most proud of and why?
Well, the vulva, vagina, you know, vagina, vulva and the vagina. I mean, I feel like it's like number one, that's that, my vulva vaginal area, but also my heart. Like I really feel like my heart leads me, you know, and it's taken a battering this year. And so like, I feel like I've had to allow it to be cracked open, you know, and then also just like, you know, I think one of the things that happens as we age is that if there's some issue with our sexuality, it's easy to avoid it. And I don't feel like I've done that. I've really been trying to enjoy it. And so I'm pretty proud of my heart and my vulva, my vagina.
I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. I'm very proud of my heart and my vulva. Am I right?
That's a best great t-shirt ever.
Question number four. What single piece of advice would you give to the next gen of women to prepare them for the transitional changes to come?
Orient your sexuality towards yourself. Mm. Like really decide what pleases you, what turns you on, what doesn't turn you on. Like your sexual self should start with yourself and then you get to share it with someone else. That's what I would say.
Excellent advice.
Yeah. And our final bonus question, nowhere near as deep, is if you could be reborn into any past decade, which would it be and why?
Oh, huh. I'm a hippie. I was born in 1965 and I was watching, do you know the show Reversing or the Netflix movie Reversing Roe?
Oh, is this the Roe versus Wade?
You have to watch it. It's okay. Stunning. I was looking at that and like, you know, Gloria Steinem with the hair and the glasses, you know, like I was really like, I was feeling that time. So I think the 1960s, that's what I'm going to say. Just being like a hippie, coming out, not wearing a bra, you know. Yeah.
I got to say, not surprised.
Yeah.
Not surprised.
Wait, can I ask you? Do we have time? Can I ask you guys?
Yeah. The same. Is it the same question?
It's the same question. I'm interested, Ellie. What would yours be?
You'd think I would ever give thought to the questions that we ask other people and like have a prepared answer. Even though I know it was a really hard time. I mean, every decade has a really hard parts of it, depending, you know, how or where you were born, right? Mm-hmm. Like what kind of family you were born into. But my grandmother was British. My mother's British and lived through World War II, London, and it was terrible and hard. But her stories about going to the dances and meeting, you know, something about that. Anytime I see a film or a TV show set in that time, in that place.
Ellie, your obsession with Call the Midwife just continues.
Exactly. It speaks to me, you know, like drawing a black line up the back of your leg because you couldn't afford the stockings kind of a thing.
Yeah. Like a pencil skirt. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
What about you,
Julia?
This is going to be a weird one. But I just kind of had this conversation with like a group of friends the other day. I just had a moment where I was like, damn, I miss the 90s. Like,
You really thrived in the 90s.
I thrived in the 90s.
I was there.
Yeah. And you know, like women were just kind of like coming up and out. You were getting out of that kind of like shoulder pad, like 1980s bullshit with the hairspray and the perms. And we were like into the, you know, I was like dressing like a guy. I just wore like plaid shirts and like, I was just total grunge, like, you know, totally like anti.
Shaved.
Yeah. I shaved my head, but like, it was still a little like complicated and not, you know, completely without problems because it was the Monica Lewinsky age, you know, yeah. There was a little like there were some issues. So the decision was between me and the friends. We were like, okay, if we can go back with the knowledge we have now, we can do it.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's and then a I'll great just
we'll start the Me Too in like 1998.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that would be nice. Oof. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of Me Toos. It's just going to keep getting recycled. Yes. Unfortunately, right. It's going to just keep getting recycled.
Well, it's time to take out the trash. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, my friend. It was really good to see you. I love Julia when she puts her head back. Put your head back. Ellie, look at her when she puts her head back.
She looks
it's like she look at you get laid right there.
Like right in the drain.
For our listeners who can't see, Julia and I are on Zoom and we have our drain, the actual down the drain swirling background behind our heads. So when we lean back, it does look like our heads are going down a drain.
It's great.
Kelly, I've never tried a jade egg, but this has been amazing. And I can't wait to dive into that world. And I saw that you recommended a certain one called Chakrubs. So we will link to that in our show notes and I'm going to look for it. And just thank you.
Yeah, it was really good to hang with you ladies. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we close this out, I just want to thank you again also for your influence and inspiration in my own personal journey with movement and Pilates. If any listeners are interested in getting certified as a Pilates teacher or taking any of Kelly's courses, she is a powerful, knowledgeable, and inviting force. I can't stress that enough. You are so inviting.
Oh.
And I can't recommend her enough. So with that, if you'd like to know more about Kelly Kane and the work that she does, please visit our show notes for all her social media links and website. Thanks again, Kelly. This was awesome.
Bye, guys.
I love her. I want to be her.
Yeah, I'm not brave enough to be her, but I'll try to be brave enough to take her sexuality course, maybe. And like, just to be clear about something we said earlier, I'm not a never nude, okay? I'm just like a rarely nude.
You're not having sex through a hole in a sheet, are you?
No, I'm not. But maybe I'll try it. It sounds very cozy for the winter. Through the hole in a sheet?
Yeah, I don't know. That just gives me, it just gives me like orthodox vibes and like freaks me out. Am I right?
I mean, yeah, but it could be hot. I'll report back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have some old sheets I'll cut up.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know. All right.
Okay.
Listeners, if you want to continue consuming content about Ellie's nudity status, please keep listening to our podcast. Review it if you haven't already done so and share it with anyone you think who might enjoy it. You can also support us at Patreon by clicking the support button on the episodes page of our website or by going to patreon.com/circlingthedrainpodcast.
And now we will end this episode with quotes we like. Because why not?
Why not, Ellie?
Why not? It's our show. We can do whatever we want. My quote of choice is by Eleanor Roosevelt, and it goes like this. Women are like tea bags. You never know how strong they are until they're in hot water.
That was lovely.
Isn't that a good one?
I love it. And my quote of choice is by Queen Latifah. I am a strong woman with or without this other person, with or without this job, and with or without these tight pants.
As we all know, Julia hates tight pants.
I hate tight pants. And Ellie loves teabagging.
Oh!
This episode was produced by me, Julia Gradocki.
And me, Ellie Dvorkin Dunn. Now remember, we feel your pain.
You're not insane.
You haven't gone down.
You're just circling the drain.